Okay, we'll get started. This is Alicia Barber. I'm here with Norman Evansino, and the date is Friday, September 13th, 2013, and we're at his home up at Sky Peaks. And so, Mr. Evansino, do I have your permission to record this interview today?
Yes, you do.
Okay, great. All right, I'm going to start out with some very easy questions. When and where were you born?
Oh, I was born in Reno, Nevada, on February the 2nd, 1917. And at the time, my folks lived on Quincy Street, about approximately where what used to be the Holiday Hotel or motel, but now it's called what?
The Ramada.
Ramada, that's correct.
So is it right around Fifth Street?
Yes.
Somewhere around there? Were you born at the house or were you born in a hospital?
I'm sure it was at the house.
Really? Okay. And that, and what were your parents' names?
Oh, my dad's name was Louis Evansino, and my mother's name was Florence. Her maiden name was Ninnis. And she was from Silver City, Nevada. And of course, my dad was born in the Truckee Meadows out in the, on a ranch out here somewhere.
Okay.
And he grew up most of his life on Huffaker Lane, I believe.
So his family went back a couple more generations, didn't they?
Oh, yes. Well, no, my Italian grandparents came over from Italy and settled in the valley. And my English, my mother's folks, they're from England and were miners and came over, first settled in Michigan or in there for the iron mines. Then they eventually moved out to the West Coast. And when Virginia City was started, they settled in Silver City, just below Virginia City. And I had an older brother, 3 years older than myself, and he was born in Silver City.
Okay.
And then I was, of course, in Reno. But we moved up to Virginia City from Reno in 1920, when I was 3 years old. And then I spent the time through high school up there and went to grammar school at the First Ward School for 3 years and then was moved up to the Fourth Ward School at the south end of town from the fourth grade through high school.
And you graduated from high school in
what year? I graduated from high school in 1936, one of six members of the graduating class. And as far as I know, I'm the last one of that class.
Oh, is that right? And I want to talk to you a lot more about your life in Virginia City. I'm wondering, could you possibly remember anything of your life in Reno before you moved up there at age three? You were pretty young.
Well, I do remember that for some reason I can remember airplanes flying over our house there, and they were landing at this little airstrip that's now the fairgrounds up off Wells Avenue.
Oh, sure.
And those were World War I fighter planes, small enough to land in there, of course. And I do remember that. And I remember that we had chickens in the backyard, and somehow I remember one of the chickens one time got into the house or up to the kitchen door, and I remember trying to eat something off of a plate that was out on the back porch. Why, I don't know.
These great little kids' memories. Did that house that you lived in stay in the family for a while after that?
Oh, it was a rented house.
It was, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So did your family still have land in the Huffaker area, do you think, where the family had been several generations
before? Well, yeah,
before?
There's some of the people that stayed on the farm the younger, my dad's younger brother, Johnny, John Avancino, he's lived there till he died, and he's got a daughter still living. Anyway, she, Betty Malarkey now, she married Dave Malarkey. But I think Dave is, I don't know whether Betty still lives on the farm or who has it now. I don't know.
We could find out. That could be fun. So do you remember, you probably came down to Reno to visit when you were living in Virginia City during those years.
We'd come down on the V&T Railroad.
Oh, you would? Tell me about that. What was that like?
And when we moved, when my mother and I moved up to Virginia City, that's the way we went up, was on the V&T. I remember that.
So you said your mother and you moved up. Was your father already there?
Well, my dad and my older brother, they moved up first to kind of get settled before we moved up.
Okay.
And he transferred up there as a barber.
Okay, because I was thinking it's kind of a funny time to move up there when it seems that there wasn't a lot of activity.
Well, that's in 1920 now. That's when the merger of the American Flat was going big. That was a big draw, and people were moving up there then.
Okay.
But when I graduated from high school, which was over 10 years afterwards, it had started to go downhill. And it went downhill pretty fast when Depression came on all down.
Right. So when you would come down from there to visit people in Reno, you would take the train. And how far would you take the V&T? Where were you going to visit?
Well, we stopped at Hoofacre Station out there and out to the ranch. I remember going out there. But if we came down here, I remember coming down when I was 5 years old to get my tonsils out at the old, I guess it was then the St. Mary's Hospital, which is no more, of course. It's been gone a long time. But we stayed with some neighbors that we used to live with or live by on Quincy Street while I recovered from my tonsillectomy.
Oh. And did you stay down there for some time, for several days?
Oh, no, just a day or two and then back up there again.
So what do you remember about that journey on the train to come down from Virginia City all the way to Reno? What was that like?
I just remember I can still see the chandeliers swaying as as the road would be rough or going around a bend or something. I can remember those swaying. And, well, to me it was a big deal to be on the train.
So chandeliers sounds pretty elegant. Was the whole inside very elegant?
Well, I thought it was. Yeah, it was kind of plush seat, and so on. And I do remember going over the Crown Point Bridge. There was, in those days, when the V&T ran in Lower Gold Hill, there's a ravine there, and they had a wooden bridge. Yeah, when the train went right over the top of that, and that was pretty scary.
When you got a little older, say in high school, would you come down and do different things in Reno ever with friends?
Well, yeah, any athletic events we were able to, and track meets and basketball games. And I remember going to the University of Nevada when they had some one-act plays up there, and I was in one of those up there, and I forgot who was it. I think Julia Vianney was a teacher at that time, our English teacher. I think she got me involved in that.
So there were plays that were put on by the university, but they had kids from high school
No,
perform?
The plays were put on by our English department. They got them together, and we presented them in a contest up there to see how we, and I don't think we won anything, but it was fun to be able to participate, yes.
It sounds like even though it was a very small school in Virginia City, they had sports, they had theater. Do you feel like you had all sorts of activities?
Well, limited.
Okay.
The farthest trip we took as a basketball team when I was on the team was Lovelock, Nevada. He didn't go to Las Vegas. He didn't go to Elko, or he didn't go when he got to Carson City, of course, in Gardnerville, but all local. In the Stewart Indian School, we used to play them, I remember.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. But it's nothing like it is now, where they nothing to go to Las Vegas or go over to Colville or different places.
Right.
No, and one of the biggest things we could do is get a trip to Bauer's Mansion. That was a big deal.
What was that like then?
Well, it was great because they had two pools. They had the hot water pool with the island in the middle and all that, and then the overflow from that went into the second pool, and that was the cold pool, we called it. It was a lot less heat in it than there was in the other one. And then I remember climbing up the hill to Sandy and Eileen Orm's graves, and their daughter, what was her name? I've forgotten now. But they're all buried up on a hill up above the...
Would you go down there as a family, or would you go just by yourself on the train with other kids?
Oh, no, we wouldn't. Well, we didn't take the train down there. No.
Oh, sure. Okay.
That was always later when we were... By then, somebody would have a car, probably. And then they began to have a bus going back and forth to Virginia, too. And they'd bring the... You wouldn't get the V&T up there every day after they got the bus going. And he would deliver the mail and the papers. And that was, well, you heard of Ty Cobb, of course.
Yes.
Well, Ty Cobb's dad was a bus driver, Will Cobb.
Oh.
And then later years, Ty and I were roommates at a boarding room house over here before I got married. Yeah.
Oh, no kidding. Where was that located?
On, I think it was Bell Street. It was off of West 2nd Street, and there was a church right on the corner. It's not there anymore, and I'm sure it was Bell Street.
This is down in what we call the Pounding Edition, down by the river.
Yeah,
right. Just
yeah.
A couple blocks up from Riverside.
Yeah, right.
So it was a boarding house, huh? Was it all just young men?
Yeah, yeah. We had Threckles. The Threckle Garage was on 4th Street further. The Threckle's Ballpark was on 4th Street. And they used to have semi-pro players come and play on the team. And I remember we had one of their players staying at the boarding house with us, Tony Gomez. He was quite a character, too. And... that's about all I remember that.
So was that where you moved after you graduated from high school in Virginia City? You moved down to Reno.
I moved down to Reno, but I got room and board to go to Reno High School, or Reno Business College, and it was, you've heard of Forrest Lovelock. Forrest Lovelock had owned the Richardson Lovelock. They owned the Ford agency on 4th Street. Well, his mother and his sister had an extra room in their place where they were renting on St. Lawrence Avenue. And when I came down to go to business college, we were asking around where there might be a place where I could stay, you know. And their name popped up, so my brother and I went out and looked it over, and I took a room there. With them, mm-hmm. with Juanita Lovelock, that was Forrest's sister, and his mother, and they cost me all of $35 a month.
And while you were going to the business college, did you have a job at the same time? Is this when you worked for the power company?
No, that's before I got to. Yeah.
Okay.
No, that was on money I saved shining shoes in my dad's barbershop and peddling papers and delivering special deliveries for the post office.
Whoops, we're going to have to pause for a minute here.
Yeah, he'll be through.
Okay, a lot of lawnmower action going on.
Yeah, he's just blowing the old dust off.
Okay. So you came down. I remember you were telling me you graduated from high school. What, that was
1935?
1935, yeah. Okay, Okay. All right, so we're back recording again. Okay, so you had talked to me about coming down for business college, and you were finding a place to stay, but then you were saying that you actually headed back up to Virginia City. What was the job that took you up there?
Well, it was Christmas vacation time, you know, and all. So I went back up there, and I got a job, the WPA job. Was a timekeeper for the, they had a crew up there working around repairing the old sewer line and different things that the county needed. And Alan Bible was our district attorney up there at the time, who later became the U.S. Senator, you know. And I worked out of his office as a timekeeper for the WPA.
Huh.
And like I say, I am... The main office was down in Carson, and a fellow by the name of Casson, I believe. And I would turn my time period things into him and all. But that was all, like I say, a handsome sum of $44 a month. And anyway, I stayed with that until the next fall. Then I came back down to Reno, and I connected with Wyman Evans, who worked at the power company, and with Wyman's help, I got a job there, and writing up bills and using an addressograph machine, printing up the bills that would be sent out. I ran the addressograph machine that printed up the addresses.
Are you saying address grab machine?
Addressograph.
Addressograph.
You never heard of an
Is that a brand? Is that a client?
No, that's a machine, a dressograph.
Well,
that was probably the name of it, too.
Okay.
But anyway, your bill stub had about four different things on it, and you'd have a nameplate that you would have to work through a dressograph machine to get a nameplate that go into a file, and then this... It was really complicated. And anyway, you'd sit there and you'd put your foot on the thing and it would come down and print this. You'd put the nameplate in there and then you'd start with these handbills and you'd take them and put them in there individually so it would print this part, and this part. But you had to keep your fingers out of the way because that darn thing would come down and hit your fingers if you didn't. So,
did it ever get you?
Well, I imagine it did at first, and it was surprising. They told me that very few people could get that thing synchronized so you could just pick them up and keep going without having to stop. Uh-huh. And that was the main goal was for me to be able to do that, and I was able to do it.
Okay.
You'd put your foot down, and you'd grab the bill and put it through. This thing would come down and stamp the name, the address on the different parts of the stub, the bill, and then you'd grab the next one, and by then the machine would flip out the old address graph plate that was there and put a new one in, and then you'd do this again. And that gave me, I did that for $75 a month.
Did that seem like a good wage to you?
Well, yeah, from $44 it was. And then later, I got off of that. Well, in the meantime, beside that, you'd deliver mail around to all the different offices, the heads of the different departments of the power company. And then I graduated from there into the billing department itself, and I would be writing up the bills or putting the figures in the bills to be sent out and all. And I think for that job I got $85 a month. And I stayed there till 1939. No, I stayed there longer than that. I stayed there less than that. I think it was 1938. I got a chance to work over with the farm, a combination office of county extension work and farm bureau work and 4-H and AAA. There was a combination of all these agencies, and they needed somebody kind of to run the office part of it there for mailings and scheduling meetings and all that. And you worked with county extension agents there. You had a county extension agent and a homemakers agent and an assistant. And anyway, let's see, where was I going with that?
Well, you were getting the new job. What building was the power company in, and then what building were you working on for the new job?
Well, the power company was in what used to be the old bank building that was later torn down and has been replaced. And the city hall was right on First Street, and the power company office, which was part of the bank building, was right next to it across the alley. And then there was, and then across the street from that was the Majestic Theater and the YWCA and the old post office on the corner of Virginia and okay. First Street.
So the power company was in the building on the northeast corner of First and Virginia. Was that the arcade building?
No, it was right on First Street.
It was right on First Street.
Yeah,
okay.
part of the bank building itself.
Okay.
Yeah, they rented space from the bank.
Okay.
And then that's all been torn down and all replaced.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of hard.
Big parking garage.
It's hard to picture it. Yeah.
But and then when you got a job with the Farm Bureau and those other agencies, was that in the old federal building?
No, that's in the present post office building.
Okay, because that would be a pretty new building at that point.
Oh, brand new, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we were upstairs in the northeast corner on the second floor.
I've just recently been in there because they're going to reopen that building. Yeah, as offices. They're really nice offices.
I want to see that when they do it.
They're very spacious and they have a lot of big windows.
Yeah.
Was it a pleasant place to work?
It was nice because our office overlooked the river. And I could look down and see the river and the ducks flying by. In the wintertime, I could see the big chunks of ice coming down the river and everything. We had some pretty bad winters in those days,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of cold weather. I remember the ice coming down that river.
Was that building completely full of offices at that point?
It was full.
It was.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the inside, the atrium was open at that point, wasn't it? They closed it in later, but was there a central area?
No, it was all closed in. The okay. downstairs was all closed in with the boxes and the windows and everything. And Pete Peterson's office was there next to the elevators.
On the second floor?
First floor. First
he was
floor.
Down. Oh, okay. Oh, he was right down there in those big offices that are facing Virginia Street?
No, he was facing Virginia, right.
Okay. And then you said you were on the second or the third floor?
We were on the second.
Second floor.
Yeah, only and I was facing the river. And I was in the northeast corner on the second floor.
So what other kinds of offices were around you in that building?
The FBI was right next to us. And I forgot who else was down there.
Mm-hmm. That building has a great history. Oh, and we'll be doing some more work, probably doing interviews for that one, too. So then you worked, okay, so you worked in different places, and then were you continuing to live in the boarding house, or did you move
well,
at some
yeah,
point?
I continued to live in the boarding house until, I lived at the boarding house on 2nd Street there, 2nd and Bell, until I got married, which was in April of 1939. So then we got an apartment in the Francisson Apartments, the old Francisson Apartments. Have you heard of them?
I've heard of that. Where is that?
Well, you know where the Sands Regency is?
Yes.
Now? Well, the Francisson Apartment was right about there.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was a nice place to live. And we had, and there again, I think we only paid $37.50 for rent and so on. But that was a nice place.
Mm-hmm. And tell me your wife's name.
Marie. Mm-hmm. And she was Garrett. Okay. Her dad was a railroader and a brickman on the railroad. And they lived in Sparks. Mm-hmm. She went to high school in Sparks.
Okay. And how did you meet her?
Oh, I met her very romantically on a train going to San Francisco.
Really? Tell me about that.
Well, in those days, one of the highlights of the university, at least, was to a football game against St. Mary's down in the Kezar Stadium in San Francisco. And Sierra Pacific Air, wait a minute, I'm all wrong.
Southern Pacific.
They would run an excursion train down. And so, anyway, I thought that would be fun to take my vacation on this excursion trip down to see the ball game in San Francisco. So I got on the excursion train, and while on there, I met Marie going down to San Francisco. And that's how we met.
Was she still in high school?
Oh, she was in college then.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I was working for the power company then. I was working for the power company then.
Okay. Well, I want to fast forward a little bit just to talk about your time at Eveleth Lumber and thinking about 4th Street and Prater Way, because I know that later on, and we'll come back and talk about what you did in the meantime, because you had an incredible career doing so many things. Working for Senator McCarran in Washington, D.C.
Right.
And then, of course, serving in the U.S. Navy. And then you were telling me kind of inadvertently the Marines.
Yeah, right. And I didn't think I was going to wind up in the Marines for a year, but I did.
And then coming back and working for the Veterans Administration. I wonder, did you end up buying property in Sparks because your wife was from Sparks? Did she want to move back there?
That's probably why, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, all her friends were down there, and they were coming back from the war, too, same as I was. Mm-hmm. And there were three of us got together and were going to buy lots in this one block and be neighbors, all three of us. And I was the only one that finally bought a lot. The rest of them didn't.
Oh, they never did. And so you bought a lot. And this was, I think, this must have been maybe the late 40s by then that you bought your property there?
Well, let's see. I got out of the Navy in 1945, and I bought my lot in 46, I think. Yeah.
And where was that located exactly?
Located on G Street in Sparks. G and 9, almost, just not quite on the corner of G and 19th.
So this was just north of Prater Way. Were they calling it Prater Way at that point?
They called it Prater Way, yeah.
So were there many other houses up there already?
There wasn't any. It was just one old shack up on the end of the block.
Had it been a ranch or something, or a dairy?
All of that had been a ranch, I guess, yeah.
Okay.
And the street wasn't even in. I mean, it was just a cow trail up there.
Wow.
And there was no curb and gutter, no sidewalk, no street. So that I had to take care of all that eventually as they put them in. Not like it is today.
No, that's a big responsibility. And then, so there were some things along Prater Way, I guess.
Prater Way, it was filled.
Okay.
Yeah, it was loaded.
What do you remember were some of the early businesses or places that were along Prater Way, right around where you lived when you first got there? You were pretty close to Deer Park.
Well, yeah, right there by Deer Park. Oh, there was a grocery store right down the street. And then Ideal Drug got in there later.
What was the drugstore called?
Ideal Drug.
Ideal Drug? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
They got down there later. And Ross's photo studio, they might still be there.
On Prater?
Yeah. Then there was a bigger grocery store and a little grocery store. I forgot the real ones that were there then. That's been too long ago.
But it seemed like you were close to a lot of things to shop for. You could get food. And,
oh, yeah. We got along. It was a good little neighborhood, yeah.
What was Deer Park like at that point?
The what?
What was Deer Park like? Was there a big pool? Was that pool there?
I don't know if they... I think that's the same original pool that was there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they called it Deer Park. And there weren't any deer there when I was there, but that was before my time.
Right. It looked like all the way down, even going toward 4th Street when you were in Reno, there were just lots of little restaurants. I mean, we have the Coney Island Bar there now.
It's still there, yeah.
The Copenhagen Bar had been closer to that, and then it looks like they moved when the freeway went in. And there were a lot of other ones.
That Casario or Casario?
Casals.
Yeah, she's still there.
Mm-hmm.
And, we had a lot of little restaurants on 4th Street. Mm-hmm. Of course, 4th Street in those days was the main street.
Right.
And it was Highway 40.
What was it like then when it was very busy as Highway 40?
Well, it was just busy, that's all. I mean, yeah, nothing special I remember about it. Just a busy place.
Yeah.
And then when they put in the new freeway, that changed all that too.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering how the job with Eveleth Lumber came up.
Oh. Well, that goes back to my Navy days, believe it or not. When I left the island of Guam to come home, I got on a troop transport, and we were in the bunks. I don't know, have you seen a troop transport with the bunks about 10 high, stacked one on top of the other? Well, that's the way they were. Anyway, I had a bunk about 3 high from the floor, and right next to me, about the same spot on the other tier, was a fellow that I got to know, and he was coming to Reno also. And we got to be friends aboard ship, but I didn't ever know him in the service or anything. And after we got back to the States, when I worked for the Veterans Administration, I knew him there and helped him out and so on. And anyway, he knew the fellow that worked at Eveleth Lumber Company somewhere through his wife, I think. And I guess the subject of getting help at Eveleth Lumber came to him, and they offered him a job there to help out at Eveleth Lumber. And for some reason, he didn't take it, but he mentioned my name to them and told me about it. So I went up to see about it. And at that time, I didn't think the Veterans Administration was going to, I thought it was going to wind down and not be very much. So I thought I better get out of here and get something on my own, because at the Veterans I was helping people get jobs, training on the job, going to school and everything else, and I was just sitting there on a $300 a month job, and they were getting jobs $500 a month or something like that, and I thought I better get something better. So I decided to take the job, and that's how I got that job.
What was your friend's name who had brought it to you? Oh, we can think of it later. That's fine.
That, yeah.
So, did you have to interview? Mr. Eveleth in charge at that
Mr.
point?
Mr. Eveleth was in charge.
Uh-huh.
And his son-in-law was managing the place at the time.
Okay.
And they needed somebody in the office. So, for the next 25 years, I was on the on the counter and the telephone, writing up orders and listening to people and their wants and their troubles and all. And I was a bookkeeper, like I say, and filling orders, loading lumber and plywood and sheetrock on their grandmother's top of her car sometimes. They were always sending somebody down to get supplies for them when they needed something, and with no truck. So we'd try and do the best we could by piling stuff on their car and tying it up with rope through the doors.
So how, if you could, this would be really helpful if you can just describe the operation of that business. I mean, it had been there a long, long time before Eveleth bought it.
It had been there as Eveleth, or as Verdine Lumber Company for years, and it was the retail outlet for the Verdine Lumber Company in Verdine.
Okay.
And then they had a warehouse, and they had a mill. The mill, of course, the mill is still there, what's left of it.
In Verdine?
No, on 4th Street.
Okay, that one, right.
Yeah, we had a cabinet shop back there, mm-hmm. where you'd build cabinets and made doors, windows, cabinets, and anything that came along. And if somebody wanted a piece of lumber planed down on a plane, we had a planer back there and all, and circular saws, and a lot of heavy equipment in there.
Was the lumber coming in on the train still?
The only lumber we got when I was there on the train was hardwood from the East Coast. But anything else by then was coming in on trucks.
Okay.
And most of our lumber, pine lumber, came from Loyalton over here. Loyalton, California.
Mm-hmm.
We got clear pine lumber from them. And then, of course, we got Douglas fir from Oregon down, but that would be by truck.
Okay. So you weren't just a supplier of lumber to people. You actually built the products there, cabinets and everything.
Things, yeah.
Okay. So when you had the lumber coming, you had specifically ordered different types of lumber to come
for our own use, but
okay.
Then you'd be selling off of that, too. Some would be for supply and some of your own use, right?
Mm-hmm. And did you also just sell lumber for people who were constructing buildings and houses?
Oh, sure. That was our main business.
That was the main business.
Right.
Okay. So how many people were working in that space at the same time? There were a lot of different jobs to do then at the lumber company.
We had truck driver, and we had yard men, and we had cabinet men, and we had saw filers.
What is that word?
Saw.
You saw know, filers. Oh, okay.
Circular saw. When they'd bring them in to get filed, there was a man down in the basement of the mill. He had equipment to file, to sharpen saws.
Okay.
And he'd sharpen hand saws, circular saw, whatever he wanted. And that was, he had quite a little business going on there.
So there were multiple buildings. We were looking at a picture before of what the area looks like now, and you were saying that those were the main buildings.
Right.
Are still there. So in the front, closer to 4th Street, but right behind that alley, I guess it's an alley, is it? There's a smaller road south of 4th Street. And then there's a small building that you said was the office building, and then a bigger building. Is that where all
that was? That was a mill building. And
the large building is a mill building.
We had a garage on one end, and the saw filer was down in here by the garage. And
more on the east side of the building, then, was where the saw filer was. Okay.
Yeah.
And then the building a little to the north was the office building.
That was the office. And we stored lumber in there, stored our molding in there. Oh, we got our molding out of Loyalton, too. Our different molds that we used,
mm-hmm.
crown mold, bed mold. And
then you'd shape
them doorstop.
All.
And we had it all in bins there.
Okay.
And we could load out of there and deliver to our customers.
Okay. So you started working there in 1948, and I saw that there was a really big fire there in 1950. Do you remember that? Apparently, there was just a very destructive fire there in July of 1950.
Let's see.
And I'll tell you what that...
Of course, I wasn't there in 1950.
Oh, you weren't? Oh, I thought you started in 48.
No, no. 1950, I was back from the Marine Corps. Let's see. Wait a minute. Excuse me. I'm a little off on... Yeah, I was there.
Right. Yeah.
I went there in 19... Where did I say? 1940. I got there about 1946 or... No, I got there, probably at 46.
You think?
Because I worked at the veterans when I first got out in 45, 46, and probably a little bit of 47. And then I was then, let's see, in 1940, where did I go? In 48, I went to the power company, or to the Eveleth Lumber.
Okay.
Right.
In 48. So I was just curious because it seemed like fires. Of course, the worst thing to happen to a lumber company. I don't know if you remember any fires there.
We didn't have any fire.
Okay.
If we had a fire, it would burn the whole thing up.
Right. You had mentioned to me before that you remembered sometimes.
Well, the fire that I mentioned was the Golden Hotel fire downtown. And then I could see from where I was. I climbed up on the roof of the mill so I could see the fire better.
Oh, wow.
we didn't have a fire.
Right, okay. You had mentioned to me that sometimes there were people that would kind of hang around in the lumber yard there or would steal the lumber.
Oh, yeah. That's because there was no fence around the lumber yard.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Elder never put a fence up around the lumber yard. And the Indians used to gather over there on the lumber piles and in the cribs where we put lumber and all. And they would have their parties over there on the weekends a lot of times.
Why do you think they come there of all places?
Well, just nobody would bother them.
So you remember seeing them around a lot?
Yeah.
And
we only worked half a day on Saturday. We didn't work, but we had to work 6 days a week, but we closed up at noon on Saturday. So it was, they could do what they wanted over there Saturdays and Sundays. And then there was a shanty town on the river down below, and they're the ones that used to steal the lumber and build their shacks down there.
Oh, really? So on the other side of the railroad?
Down.
And on the bank of the river?
Yeah.
Huh.
And that was on the other side of the overpass, too, on that down below. Desert Glass was between them and us.
Okay. Were there a lot of break-ins? I mean, was theft a big problem there?
Well, after a while, we got a problem. They were breaking into our office building. They were breaking the window. Some guy had come and throw something through the window and break the window and come in and take stuff. Yeah, that happened a number of times. And finally... when the lumberyard was sold in 1968 and the Eveleths and everybody got out of it, then they put a fence up.
Oh.
And then that stopped the break-ins of our place. But a lot of times I'd come to work on Sunday or Monday morning and I'd find a window broken out, glass all over the floor. And sometimes I'd even find paint spilled on the floor. And we had a hiding place for our change anyway, and they never did find it. But we had a big old safe in there that was never locked. You could open it up and look in there. But we tried to keep our records in there, and fortunately they didn't swipe those, but they were looking for money all the time.
Mm-hmm. And would they take tools and things too, though?
Well, they take tools, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they'd steal tools even while you're in there sometimes. Like you'd have a customer that would send you out to get something in the mill or something, and while you were gone, they'd probably take tools. I mean, when you go to take inventory, you find out you're missing this, missing that. You know you didn't sell it.
Wow.
It was gone, so we really took a beating there, I'm sure.
So was the situation where you had a lot of customers who were repeat customers who you knew very well?
Well, that's it. We lived on retail more than wholesale.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, most of the other yards in town were looking for wholesale business and contractors and all, mm-hmm. and we were looking more for retail business.
Okay.
And that's what we lived on.
Selling wood products, but also paint and other things?
Paint and wood products and hardware and tools. And, of course, our cabinet shop, like I was telling you in the back, that helped out too, because then a lot of people wanted something done. So they'd come to us and we'd send them out to Otto, who was our cabinet maker, and he could build anything. He trained over in Germany.
So did folks who worked at Evelith Lumber help build any parts of those two houses that you built, your own houses?
My second house, I got a lot of my stuff from our cabinet shop and their mm-hmm. millwork. Yeah, and of course, being in the lumber business, when I built my second house, where I had something to say about what was going to go in it, I had one bedroom upstairs that I put in knotty pine, and then the other room I finished off up there, I put in redwood. And I had to get doors to match, the doors that I had for my closets, I would have Otto make the doors, sliding doors for closets up there, that would match the redwood or the knotty pine.
So you had a real showcase for the lumber company in your house. And the second house was right next door to your first house?
Yeah, right.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I wonder what you remember about the time when the Wells Overpass was being constructed. That was in the late 1960s, and that was obviously very disruptive to your business, I would imagine.
Oh, it was, yeah.
So do you remember the decision to make it happen, or were the Eveliths concerned about it?
Was there
a lot of activity about that?
Well, they just accepted it.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest, it interrupted us, all right, because you couldn't get the flow of traffic through there while they were building, you know, because
mm-hmm.
They did build it higher over the old underpass, and it disrupted the traffic quite a bit. But one of the biggest things that caused us concern was when they put the oil pipeline through. You know, they brought the pipeline down right alongside the railroad until they got to Wells Overpass. And then that caused the pipeline concern. So they had to go to bring the pipeline around up in before you got to the underpass from 4th Street. Between the underpass and 4th Street, there was enough room for them to bring the pipeline around and in front of our building and down the alley, our alley. Well, they really worked on Mr. Eveleth there to get an okay to do this. They took him to dinner and his wife and all, and treated him real royally. And I think they offered him a handsome sum of $5,000 to be able to put that pipeline across, leading into the underpass and down the alley. And he let him do it.
These are people from the city who were trying to convince him? Is that
No, it was the pipeline company themselves.
Oh, the company. Okay,
yeah.
So they were told they had to do something.
They had to do something.
And they needed permission.
They could have given him a heck of a lot more, I know.
Wow.
But I was not any part of that, so I...
Yeah. Did you think that it made sense to do the Wells Overpass? What was the reason for building that? Did they think traffic was very bad at 4th and Wells?
Well, I can't remember the details on that. But everybody at the time thought it was a great idea, I know that. But I wasn't too much of a party to that, so I didn't know.
The other thing that was happening in that area in the 60s that I saw was that there was an urban renewal project where they were doing slum clearance and kind of calling a lot of the houses in that area slums. And it looked like it was kind of around the area where you said you were born. Yeah. But then they demolished around that same time.
Well, that's probably when they were trying to build the original Holiday Hotel. That's about the spot where I was born.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you think they knocked down those houses to build the hotel.
So they probably cleared them out. That's how they got that. By clearing out that old part, they were able to get some cheap property, I guess.
Mm-hmm. It seems like it was a very Italian neighborhood.
Yeah, it was.
From what I understand. Yeah.
Well, like I told you, the only name that I can remember was Bevilacqua, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And there... Well, there's some others I can probably think of, but that's the one that comes to mind first.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was only 3 years old, so I didn't know too much at the time. Yeah.
In that early period. Another person that we have interviewed is Ben Eckert.
Oh, Ben Eckert.
Eckert, yeah. Yes. Do you remember that, his parents' store?
Oh, sure.
That
was right across the highway from us.
Okay. Busy little place.
And Ben... When Ben was growing up, he started to get liquor in there and so on. That's where he got started in the Ben's in liquor business, mm-hmm. was with his dad and his folks over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were a nice family.
And then I think he was saying there was a drugstore that was right around there.
The drugstore was right on the corner of,
Is that on your side of the street, up Fourth?
No, it was right across. It was right on the corner here.
Okay. So yeah, what...
It was right on the corner in the drugstore. Right here, I guess.
And so just on the west side of where the overpass is now.
That was a Hales drugstore at the time.
Okay.
And they had a soda fountain in there, and they had a lunch counter.
Oh.
Speaking of lunches, I had to eat over there a few times.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes... if you want to take a customer, get a cup of coffee, or he want to take you, he'd go over to get a cup of coffee over at the Hales drugstore counter.
So would you typically bring your own lunch, or how would you normally eat lunch when you were working?
I would usually go home, but sometimes I'd have to bring my lunch, yeah.
Uh-huh. What do you remember about the Flanagan Warehouse while you were working at Eveleth? Was that a pretty active space?
Well, it was an active place, yeah. We used to buy a lot of stuff from them.
What did they sell?
Oh, golly, what did they sell? Oh, they sold... I think they sold cement and lime and...
Oh.
And
lots of building supplies?
Building supplies, but stuff that we would have to buy, so we a lot of times buy from them.
Okay.
And then the Morrison and Merrill that was on Park Street... like I told you about Morrison, they were a wholesale lumber outfit too, and they had different products that we could buy.
What were they called? Morris?
Morrison and Merrill.
Morrison and Merrill, okay. Okay, so they were actually, it's an interesting, it seems like, combination of industrial places and commercial, you know, retail stores. But then there were houses around there, too, so it did feel like you were pretty close to residential areas.
Well, then there
areas.
Were a lot of motels.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was a little combination of everything.
Do you remember when that motel was built on the site where the
Nevada
Packing used to be?
Yeah, I remember that. And they had I think the first Denny's that we had in Reno was in that building that they built there. And that was a big thing to have a Denny's move in right across the street from us.
I bet. Pete Claudianos wrote about that in the book that he wrote from his oral history and was saying they were pretty excited to have a Denny's there.
You're right.
So the motel there was really close to some industrial places, really, but it wasn't too loud, you think? It was still just kind of a pleasant place to stay. But were you still working at the lumber company when the Interstate 80 was put in?
When what?
When the Interstate, when I-80 went in?
Oh, yeah, I was still there. Yeah, I thought that was a great thing to have it up there. But it sure took the business off of 4th Street.
Mm-hmm. And your business wasn't oriented toward tourists as much as other, you know, and sort of drive-by traffic. So was the business affected, the Evelyn Lumber?
It was, yeah.
It was, huh?
But for the interstate travel, it had to be done. I mean, for all the trucking business and everything, they had to have a better way to get through town.
Mm-hmm. Did it seem like a pretty sudden change for 4th Street when that opened?
Well, I don't remember that part of it. I just accepted whatever it was, I guess.
Uh-huh. And so you really, you know, you would have driven down 4th from Prater to 4th every day. That was your commute.
My commute, yeah.
Down that stretch. Did you go into a lot of those restaurants very much that were along there?
Well, yeah, and we'd try out, if there's a new one opened up, we'd have to try it out. Whenever I didn't take my lunch, I'd have to eat somewhere, so I wouldn't always go to the same one. I'd try anything that new was in the offing.
Mm-hmm. What were some of you, any of your favorite places?
Oh, I can't remember the name of them now.
Mm-hmm.
There was one that later became a model railroad place. Is it still there?
Reno Rails is there.
Yeah, that was a restaurant at one time.
Oh, okay.
And that was a pretty good restaurant.
It was. I talked to Lily Moffitt.
I think that was one of my favorites at the time.
What kind of restaurant was it? Do you remember? What kind of food they had?
No, I don't remember that.
Uh-huh. It's a little brick building, right?
A little bit. I think they were the first tenants in the... I don't know if they built it as a restaurant to start with. I guess they did.
Uh-huh. That's pretty close to the Sutro Motel.
Yeah,
right.
A
little bit further down the road. Uh-huh. There just seem to be a lot of family-owned places. A lot of people like to go. I know the Quillices, who own the Copenhagen Bar, had bought the Copenhagen from someone else earlier. But the Quillices had their own bars and restaurants at different places along the street.
I don't remember where they would be.
Uh-huh. I've been looking at that. Did you ever go to any of the drive-ins that were closer on Prater Way? There was Ray's Drive-In, and there were a couple drive-in places, it seems.
Oh.
Did you
say there was Lee?
Lee's, right.
Oh, yeah. Well, Lee, Hudson Lee. Then that guy's name was Hudson Lee.
Oh, Lee was the last name?
No, Hudson Lee. Yeah, Lee was our last name.
Okay.
Yeah. Then he got into the building business too later on, and he had a partner, but I can't think of his name right now. And then they developed a dry lubricant that they were pushing, and I can't remember the name of it now, but instead of it being black graphite, which is real messy, you know, they had one that was silver colored, and it didn't mess things up as bad as graphite did, and they were getting that on the market. And I bet somewhere in my stuff I've got a thing of that. If I find it, I'll let you know.
Were they successful?
Yeah. I hadn't thought of Hudson Lee for a long time.
So you said at some point the Eveleth sold the business. And then did you keep working there after that? Who bought it?
Well, two young people who worked at Home Lumber Company. They got together with a contractor in town. Stewart was the main guy at Home Lumber, and what the hell was the other guy's name? Isaacson. Stewart and Isaacson And the contractor, yeah, I'll think of it. I can't think of it right now.
Oh, sure. We'll
find it. Anyway, the three of them got together and bought it. And they kept me on, and I stayed with them 5 years. And I had enough, so I had an offer to work for a contractor that I'd been selling lumber to and helping out. And his name was Miser Construction. I stayed with him 3 years, and then I moved on to McKenzie Construction for 5 years after that. And then I quit. I had enough of everything by then.
just one last thing I just wanted to ask you, because I don't want to take too much of your time today. But in those years then that you were at the same company for so long, what were some of the biggest changes that happened, either with the machinery or the nature of the business or the kind of work you did? Were there some big changes?
Well, like I said, when I worked with Evelos, we catered to retail. Well, when these kids came in, they worked for Home Lumber, who sold to contractors. Mm-hmm. They wanted big stuff. And they were trying to get that kind of business. And I stayed there to take care of my retail trade that I had built up, and the paint business I had built up, and so on. And it didn't work out as good as I thought it would.
So you must have had a pretty big showroom for the retail at some point then.
Well, when I first went there, we knocked out a wall and put in all this paint and everything that they didn't have before I got there.
So this is in that front building where the office was?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we got more hardware too as I was in there. Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like it was kind of separate, really, operations then with the retail and then what was happening.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and with the woodworking.
And then the two of the young guys, they didn't treat my retail just as I would want them to, and so mm-hmm. on. And
so when you left, is that when they stopped doing retail, or did they stop that even before you left?
Oh, no, they
stopped immediately?
Oh, they kept it going.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, they kept it going. And I don't know how much longer they stayed there, but I don't know when they quit.
Yeah.
But they had their own contractor friends that they brought from Home Lumber when they moved in there, so they were doing pretty good that way. But
did they continue to call it Evelith Lumber?
Yeah, they kept the name. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
I wonder when that closed then. You know, now I think, is it the building where they're storing tires now? Is that one of the buildings? Do you know?
I haven't been there. The building is the one that faces right on the alley.
Okay.
That's where the office was. And it never was a great office. It was an old building.
Was there parking in front of the building then? Where did people park when they came?
Well, they just parked in the alley.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, and it looks like it had been a lumber company for a very long time.
Yeah.
So those are very old buildings. Did you find that there were problems with the buildings, since the buildings were really pretty old even then?
Well, we had to do some work on the roof once in a while.
Okay.
And they didn't spend much money on the place, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. and then when you finished, you worked for a couple different contractors, and then you retired, and
I retired,
in the 1980s sometimes?
1980s when I quit.
Okay. And then did you live at the house in Sparks then after that? Okay.
Yeah.
And you were there for many years.
Yeah, I lived there till, the second house, I had McKenzie build it for me. That was about 1951, I think we started the house. And then like I told you before, it was a two-story house with a high gabled roof. And the left upstairs was left unfinished. And then I took that on myself with this project of different lumber. And then later I built a huge family room out the back when my daughter got in high school and had all her friends around. We needed more room. We added on, and then that building, that room was a 20-foot building by, or room by 14. It was a good-sized room. And I paneled that in mahogany.
It's beautiful.
From my wood.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, when it came time for me to sell my house, to move up here, the second looker bought my house.
They probably hadn't seen anything like it.
Probably not. Anyway, they came down from Lake Tahoe. They sold their house up there for a good sum, and they had money.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at my house, and we gave them a price, and they took it, and that was it.
Mm-hmm. And then you've lived here since then.
So that's why I'm able to live up here for a while.
And I've meant to drive by those houses because they're still there. And
yeah. Oh, did you drive by and see it?
I mean to go by. I haven't been by. I've looked at the maps and seen where they are. So I want to go back and look because they look wonderful. Well, I think that's enough for today. I don't want to go too far, but thank you so much for talking to me.
Well, I hope it's worthwhile for you.
It's wonderful. Thank you.